Hello, I am Stephanie Belcher.
And I am your captain on the SS podcast, Del Belcher.
How are you, dear sweet baby Delbert?
Welcome to
Learn to Like Each Other, or the podcast formerly known
as
Two Peas in a Podcast.
Welcome to the show. Stephanie, I am your ship's captain here today. I'm here. We have ore and iron, and we are sailing across these great seven seas of the North Midwest. Seven? Home, H-O-M-E. Lake St. Clair. Other bodies of water.
Five? Great Lakes?
Yeah, but there's other water.
You have a tattoo of them.
One, two, three, four, five. Then there's one there, and then it's Lake St. Clair. The Atlantic, the chain of Great Lakes. Stephanie, today we went to an apple orchard.
We did.
And listeners, this will come back around here in a moment. And we went to the apple orchard and it was amazing. And Carly loved it. She loved the pumpkins. All the pumpkins were hers.
Well, we had such a good time last weekend that we decided to go again. And I'm glad we did.
It was the fall fest. And she climbed in all the tractors. She played in all the hay. And it's worth it just to watch her eyes light up when she sees a horse and points at it and looks at me and goes, something that doesn't sound like horse, but I know in her language is horse. But as most year and a half year olds do, they get hungry. And you said, how about you get her a hot dog?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay. So I went up to the hot dog place. They had poutine. They had all your favorite fall treats. Two really long lines. And halfway through the line, I realized that there is an order line and then there was a pickup line. You'd have to order. And I didn't write a joke for the pickup line because I thought that'd be funny. Imagine. insert joke here. So I get in line at the same time as with all fall festivals. There's live entertainment, which is very good. But this year, this time, was this fella, a very like James Taylor type. 12-string jangly acoustic guitar.
This is definitely a guy that like came of age in the 70s.
Oh yeah, he's doing all of like
which isn't bad. Like, there's nothing bad about that, but you just like know him when you see him.
It's a thing. It's like that specific like James Taylor voice is so distinct.
Like, you'd look at me and be like, I bet she lies about liking pumpkin spice lattes, and I would say, yeah, I do, because they're delicious.
This is the guy who probably when he was in his 20s made a lot of that cafe money playing because he could sound like James Taylor.
True.
Like a bottom shelf James Taylor type. He knew all the words. It was great.
Well, this gentleman, Del doesn't get too judgy, but when we walked up, he heard like three strums of a guitar. And what did you say?
I said he could use a tuning.
That's not what you said. He said something like, how about you tune your guitar, buddy?
Anyway,
which could have been your dad saying that. Like, I heard it in your dad's voice and yours at the same time.
I think he had just finished all seven verses of American Pie while I was halfway through.
We're not kidding.
And then he starts on the I guess it's a tale. It's more of like a story, a saga in song. The sinking of the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. So, which, if you're not from the Midwest and not from the Great Lakes, in the 70s, so this isn't even like an old ship. This is like, it's like, oh, I got in a car crash the other day. I'm going to write a 8 freaking verse song about this ship. And apparently everybody on board died.
Well, it is a really bad story. And the anniversary of it is coming up in a few weeks. So I do want to be sensitive that this was a very bad travesty. It was the wreck of a very large ship. And it happened in 1975. It was the Edmund Fitzgerald, and it was had a big impact on the Midwest because it impacted a lot of people.
Yeah. And
I used the word impact 12 times.
It impacted the auto industry. It impacted the ore industry. It impacted the shipping industry. And most of all, it impacted the listening to music industry.
Okay.
Who is this?
So let's acknowledge that this was a bad thing.
So he starts singing the song, and all I want is a hot dog for my daughter. And I've already been in line for 20 minutes. And now this James Taylor fella starts singing the Edmund Fitzgerald song.
If you've never heard the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, Don't.
It's a bad song.
Because it was a travesty, but the only thing that made it worse is this horrible, horrible song.
And it's so popular. Who's it? Is it Gordon Lightfoot?
Gordon Lightfoot.
This is like his jam. This is like, this is the song that made him who he is.
You were waiting in line. I took Carly to go look at pumpkins.
This is Gwen Stefani's Holla Back Girl, okay?
I came back. You were still in line and the song was playing. I took her to go do another thing. I came back and the song was still playing.
But
this song goes on forever.
And you know what? I am a big fan of progressive rock and roll music, instrumental music. That's kind of long, meandering jazz. 12-minute songs. I've been there. I've played that. But the song, it's the same chords over and over again. The same melody. Plotting. It's like this Mr. Lightfoot's trying to write this modern day, like,
sea
shanty. I just can't handle it. It makes my skin crawl. And all I want is a hot dog for my daughter.
So the song is written in like a type of mode. I know nothing about this, but
I bet it is some poetic folksy.
It's written
mode.
In Dorian mode,
which is that's basically like the key it's in. It's that minory tune.
No, I don't know. Do you know?
Yes.
Do you know? Okay.
But I took 2 years of music theory. I know. Dorian, Mixolydian, Aeolian, Dorian.
Are you making up words?
No, those are real words.
Okay. So it's one of three ancient Greek something. So it comes from a thing. Like, that's his style. That being said,
that's just
the lyrics. I know that they're trying to tell a story, but they're trying to jam words like Wisconsin and Whitefish Bay into the same meter.
Wisconsin! I sat in the line for my daughter's hot dog, and it took me forever. I thought I'd die. And I got to the front of the line, and I looked behind me, and this guy is still singing. And the next line of the pickup line is 30 people deep. And I look at the hot dog boy and I say, listen, hot dog boy, here are my two hard-earned
dollars.
He was
a hot dog man.
He was a man. At this moment, he was a man about to turn hero because he looked into my dogged, rugged eyes that were saddened and tired and weary from listening to this terrible, terrible music, knowing that I had a daughter to feed and a mouth who's probably stuck in a giant vat of pumpkins at the moment. And he said, just a hot dog? And I said, yes, my dear one. And he just said, here's just your hot dog. I paid the $2. He gave me the hot dog. I did not have to wait in the pickup line. And I ran as fast as I could from Gordon Lightfoot Jr. And the day was saved, thanks to the hot dog man at the apple orchard.
And I realize the irony of us going on endlessly about this, but I have one more thought.
This is the Edmund Fitzgerald of podcasts.
One last thought. I had never heard of this rack, but then I worked for the Detroit News Partnership, and when I worked there, the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News were doing stories on the anniversary of the ship, so that's when I learned about it. And my boss...
Which lake did it sink in anyway?
Stop,
like Lake Erie.
Stop.
Not even the cool one.
Anyway. Why are you asking me this right now?
Anyway, okay, go.
You're in line for 20... You look it up.
Okay, I will. You keep talking.
Okay. So I'd never really heard of it. And then my boss, Jill, at the time told me that when she was in eighth grade for eighth grade choir, they had to sing that song. And she said it felt like she was standing up there forever.
Yeah, I believe it. And her parents probably
so
felt worse.
Find?
Where did Edmund Fitzgerald sink?
I thought it was in
Lake Superior. Huh. Okay, so at least it's a cool lake. It's very cold.
Anyway. Well, now that we've gone on as long as the song, and you've been suffering. So this is Learn to Like Each Other, not Learn to Like...
Edmund Fitzgerald. There's a beer called Edmund Fitzgerald from the Great Lakes Brewing Company of Ohio. It's very good. I feel that being Midwesterners, it's part of our heritage that we should recognize in history, not in song. The song makes me want to stab my ears out with forks. Continue.
So this is Learn to Like Each Other. It's a podcast where we talk about relationship stuff and how to learn to like things. Obviously not songs.
Well,
my
like
name
each
is Stephanie.
Other,
this
not
is Del.
Music.
Yeah.
Like each other.
I think something thing that's great is that we were both just staring at each other the whole time thinking, like, just make it end.
People are so into it. There were some people who were, like, bobbing and just like, oh, yes. Who heard that the first time and was like, Lightfoot, this is your moment?
You know, music is just about taste, and everybody's got different tastes.
It's true. It's true. Okay, I'm sorry.
There's music that I like that other people hate.
Yeah, okay. So we're liked each other. We're learning to like each other. We need an update on reality shows. We haven't been watching them because none are good that are on.
So that's our update.
The update is,
Great British Baking Show.
The relationship between Paul Hollywood and Brad is very tepid at the moment. But we've been watching Scream.
Oh, yeah. The
MTV show for youth. It's a very cheesy, bad, but amazing. Like, it's Halloween, 'tis the season. And so we're trying to watch some scary shows. And it's like, the acting is not great, but it's entertaining. And I did learn relationship things from that show. That if you don't communicate, you'll probably...
One of your significant others could be a murderer.
They're probably a murderer, and they're probably dead already. Mm-hmm. And if you just communicated and were honest, everything would be better. That's true. What I learned from Scream. Just talk to each other, people.
Terrible acting. Not great writing.
Don't wear jeans if you're a police officer.
Oh, jeans cop. That's what we were going to talk about last week.
If your hair is crazy and keeps getting crazier throughout the series, you're probably the bad guy.
So we were watching... Yeah. So we were watching Scream Season 2, and there's a new sheriff in town, and
he's not your daddy's sheriff.
You know how sometimes they use costuming to let you know that a person is laid back? It's true, right? Yeah. And so this person from the waist up wears a police uniform because he's a sheriff, but then from the waist down... Blue jeans.
Yeah, he's like a jeans. It's like a centaur, but the bottom half is jeans instead of horse. It's very confusing. The thing is,
like, if this were placed in Wyoming, something like that, it would make sense.
Like a Longmire.
And it's also off-putting because the top is blue.
Yeah.
If the top were that tan color, it would work.
Or if it was a jeans police shirt, I'd be cool with that. Because then at least we knew he had a thing. And now he's like sitting on chairs backwards. I'm a cool sheriff.
Yeah.
Talk to me, youth.
I know he does that. He like pulls out the chair thing.
That's the more heinous than the crimes of the ghost-faced killer. It's like jeans cop.
So every time we rolled up, we were like, hey, it's jeans cop.
It's so fun to watch. The third season, which is the newest season, yeah. I'm enjoying so far.
I like
far.
It. It's fun. It's different.
I do like the throwbacks to Scream, the sort of not monologuing, but the sort of like self-awareness of it I enjoy.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's
I like
fun.
That they stayed true to the what made the movie unique.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my update.
Yeah.
So Stephanie, you know we're here to actually talk about some real things.
Not the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oh, update. Carly ate the whole hot dog and she carried around the plate that it was on for a very long time.
She also dropped the hot dog in the dirt 3 or 4 times. And we were like, what is
she only
stop
dropped
her?
The bun. She kept the hot dog separate.
Yeah, it's true. She did. Anyway.
So, Stephanie, I hear that you have some data and stats and research, because that's what we're really here for.
So this is the split. This is the meat of the... This is the hot dog meat of the... Whatever.
This is the...
This is where we talk about real stuff. Mm-hmm.
If this song was the Edmund Fitzgerald... This would be the part where the song ended and things got good.
You know the best part about that song? When it ends. It's true.
You know what? I don't care if I offend you. Normally I'm like, I'm sorry if this offends you. This, I don't care. I don't care. It's a bad song.
Just an opinion.
Tragedy. Total tragedy. Terrible song.
So this article... so this is the splits where we take a relationship article turned from the headlines and talk about it. This one I thought was interesting.
Oh, good.
So there's a question.
Ask away.
The question is, how many people can we feel close to?
Stephanie, this is not a question that I've really thought a lot about. I just seem to happen to, like, at different stages in my life, find myself, like, close to just different amounts of people.
Yeah, I
know what
you mean.
One or two here. Sometimes periods I'll have, like, a lot of friends or whatever.
Like in college, I feel like, you know, you're all kind of in one geographic area doing stuff together. So there's a lot of people going on. But then when you get out of college or you're living on your own.
Yeah, you kind of lose touch with some people. You might have some friends you call or Skype or whatever, text. But yeah, closeness. I don't really know.
So, well, what do you know? Someone's done research on it.
Ah.
So according to a British anthropologist, his name is Robin Dunbar, the magic number is 150.
At the same time?
In your life.
In your life. Really?
And the real number that he got to was 148. So they rounded up.
Yeah, it's probably one or two there that slipped through the cracks.
Yeah, I know. Interesting. And so that magic number is the number of people you would not feel embarrassed about joining uninvited for a drink if you happen to bump into them in a bar.
Oh, if that's the level of closeness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Okay. I feel that.
So it's kind of like the acquaintance level.
Okay. All right. Now we're talking.
And so this is an article that I took from the BBC, which is kind of updating in nowadays with social media and stuff, mm-hmm. looking at some of the research. Does this number still hold true?
Yeah, I feel that with social media, I could see it go either way. It could either be a lot because you kind of are exposed to more people, or it could be less. Because you don't, like, in person, you interact, your interactions aren't going to be as, you don't know them in person. You only know them online.
Well, and so to get to what it could be, let's begin at the beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
So,
sound of music.
Dunbar mapped primates' brains. The end.
The end. Oh.
And so in mapping primates' brains, he found that there's a ratio between brain sizes and then group sizes for interactions.
Really?
Yeah. Think about it for a second.
So your brain size can project.
Correlate.
Correlate to how many close people you know.
Yeah, that's the operating theory.
The bigger the brain, the more acquaintances you have.
And so he concluded that the size of a cohesive social group, or the number of beers that monkeys were, wait.
They gave monkey beer?
The number of beers that the other monkeys would share. Well, you know what I mean. Uh-huh, the number of other monkeys that they.
Bananas. Like, banana beers at the bananas. at the banana bar.
So concluded that the size of a cohesive social group is relative to the size of a neocortex, the neocortex.
Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with the size of my neocortex.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I am. Wink, wink. So the neocortex is the part of the brain associated with cognition and language.
Oh.
Kind of interesting.
It is very interesting.
And so I think he was really just trying to get at, like, different parts of your brain and how it impacts social interaction.
If you have a very small cortex, you will have less beer.
And so that ratio, the 1 to 148 or rounded up to 50, dictates how much complexity a social system can handle.
Oh, okay.
So think about it that way. So you have, mm-hmm. like, a system of people interacting. How much can they all have social bonds or interconnectedness with each other before the bonds are meaningless?
Okay. I get that. I do understand that, actually.
And so another way that they've looked at this is they've looked at different groups or together. And so they've looked at those groups to see if that number, that 150, holds true. And they found that when they look at offices,
mm-hmm.
communes.
Nuns live there.
Correct. Well, I don't know. Factories, residential campsites, military organizations, 11th century English villages.
Ah.
And this one I think is interesting. Christmas card lists.
Oh, yeah.
That 150 is the magical number.
Really? So across time and space even?
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's incredible.
So going back in time, like, once you get over that, it kind of loses its impact.
Okay.
So then you've probably heard this before, but then they also talked about how there's layers of closeness and how, like, a certain number of people, like, that's the level of closeness that you can be to them.
Hmm.
And so the numbers or levels are most people will have five people that are their group. These are the people that you're closest to, that you're tightest to. Mm-hmm. You know everything mm-hmm. about them. You know their middle name, the number of children they have, where they went to school, mm-hmm. all that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's like a maximum, that five is like, that's your core.
That's your core.
The core of the cortex.
And then beyond that, you have 15 close friends.
Okay.
So you might not know, like, you know, everything that they're allergic to, but you're close to them.
Yeah, they're more of like, that's, those are the, your go-to hangouts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you have the 150 meaningful contacts.
Mm-hmm. So those would be people that you are aware of their life. You could have a conversation and, like, be happy to see each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And then you have 1,500 people that you can just recognize.
Ooh. I have a hard time remembering people's names.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people remember faces, some names.
I believe that. Feel like mine's probably smaller because it's just, like, I don't recognize a lot of people.
Well, and then there's some people, I feel like, who can remember a lot more.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So now moving beyond the numbers, there's some miscellaneous tidbits of research that have been done over time.
Okay.
And so I think you would find this interesting. Once social groups get beyond 150, they tend to break off and form new groups.
I believe that.
What does that make you think of?
It makes me think of amoebas breaking apart into other amoebas.
Churches.
Churches, when they grow and they grow and they spin off into other churches.
That's what it made me think of. I'm like, that makes sense. Like, once churches do get to a certain group.
Or the TV shows that get very popular and then they spin off into another show.
Or coming back to, like, churches, like, that's why you could do the number of services that you would have in a church based on the number of people.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. at this time it's this, at this time it's that.
Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a maximum capacity. And that kind of happens in, like, groups. So say we have a party. We've had, you know, parties at our house mm-hmm. with 20 or 30 or so people. And even those, like, not everybody can always be engaging mm-hmm. with each other all the time. Like, you'll have a couple people kind of break off over here. Mm-hmm. You'll have some people break off over here.
Yeah, cluster.
And so that at a larger scale is sort of just how your brain works.
Yeah. And so then they also said one of the things that they recommend, if you live in a city with a ton of people, one of the ways that you can feel social bonds is by joining a group that has about 150 people or something like that.
Okay.
So, like, join your own little group and collective.
Like a league or
something.
Something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so research has also found that usually if you're an extrovert, you're going to have more than 150.
Right.
So you might not be interacting with them as deeply, but you'll know more than 150 mm-hmm. most likely.
Yeah.
And then women are more likely to have more than five people in that close layer.
Okay.
Mm.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know how many. I don't, 1, 2, 3, 4.
You have like two little solid groups.
I do. And one is kind of this group of people that I've known for 15 plus years. And then the other is kind of like, once I moved to Michigan, a different group. So mm-hmm.
I think that's good.
I think so.
It's kind of, you see those like, I think maybe that large group thing happens with the smaller groups too. Of like, you start getting breaking off yeah. in these other kind of
things. I think
so. Start just kind of replicating or overflowing and going on to a new
thing. I think you're
thing.
Right, because if we like did a little network, there's people that we were friends with and then they met some of our other friends and now they're friends.
Oh, yeah. I've got friends that would be kind of, I guess, over time have moved out into those like farther yeah. areas. However, because of my friendship with them, they've met other people that they've now started a close friendship group with. And so I've seen that happen a lot. And it's I think it's really cool. I love networking people and getting people to know each yeah. other. But yeah, life, man. Life happens. Things happen. You meet new people. It's pretty cool.
And so in Sweden, the tax authority has established all of their offices so that way they're only as big as 150 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very proactive.
I thought about that. I was like, that's not a terrible idea.
Yeah, 150 people would be kind of the max of like everybody can kind of know each other enough. Not to where it's like intrusive and just mm-hmm. super gossipy, but everybody's kind of like surface yes. aware of who's around.
And some people also argue, and I think this is fair, that the number of social connections that you have is not normally distributed. So in a like a standard normal distribution. It's not a normal curve.
Okay.
Instead, you're going to have some people that are closer to the 70. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have a few people, you know, that are closer to the 300, 200, something like that.
Yeah.
Depending on a bunch of different factors.
Cool. I can see that. I actually see that really well at my work, mm-hmm. where I work, because we have faculty, but then we have staff. And at staff level, we have maybe about 150, 200 people, and I'm fairly aware of most all of them. Mm-hmm. And then there's definitely the people that I work day to day with. But then there's that faculty side where I don't know, because they're just not around, and it's kind of over that 150 mark where I don't know a lot of who these people are. And so, like, what you're talking about, I'm thinking about it, and
I know it makes intuitive sense.
And then
to
I'm
me.
Starting to think outside of work, like all of the people, like, oh wow, I could have a drink with all these people, mm-hmm. and not feel like awkward or weird about it. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
And so they've also found that if you are someone that's not just wealthy, but part of that really like super rich, mm-hmm. you can hire someone who can maintain your social relationships. Ah. So you might have a higher number because of this kind of privilege
that's
that you
cheating.
Have.
I know. That's like hiring, like adding on an expansion pack or something, or building onto your house with, like, because you have two brains working on it instead of just the one.
I remember watching some biography on Lucille Ball, mm-hmm. and something that they said about her is whenever it was her friend's birthday, she would send them flowers.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, Lucille didn't make that phone call. It's still a wonderful thought. Yeah. It's still coming from her heart, but I highly doubt she was on the phone with a florist. But that's a benefit of being extremely wealthy, is that you can
be a really good friend.
Yeah, it's true, though.
Yeah.
Because imagine how many cards and whatever you could send and how much more you could do if you...
Super wealthy. If you're listening and you're super wealthy, we'll be your friend. Tell your assistant to get on it. We're right here.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. But also, conversely, they did a study in Jamaica and they looked at people that didn't have as much money and that were poorer, and they looked at their cell phone contacts, mm-hmm. and they found that they also had a much larger social network, but they really? Had a social network that was larger for a different reason, mm-hmm. and they called it social capital.
Okay.
Because they didn't have access to economic capital or some cultural capital.
Right.
So instead, they had larger social networks to make up for the fact that they had less economic capital.
Huh. Interesting.
I know.
This is very, very good insight, Steph.
And so, like, the biggest summary of the existing body of research is that it supports cultures that are, I love this acronym, I couldn't not say this fact, supports cultures that are weird.
Ooh.
Which is an acronym.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Western, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic.
Okay.
Which makes sense. Because mm-hmm. if you aren't democratic, limits your ability to interact with other groups. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Because like in China or whatever, they block off your social media access and some of your phone access and stuff like that. So who you can have connections with are probably monitored.
Yeah, okay.
China, if you're listening.
Come at me, bro.
Don't say that.
Let's
They're
do this.
Hack you.
Let's do this, China. You
shut
and me.
Up, shut up. Just kidding. So now, how about the online era?
Oh, yeah. So how does this transition from that person to person to the online?
Well, one of the things that they found is, and I'm sure you're not surprised by this, in today's modern era, something that's happening is there's a lot more connections at the workplace specifically because of email.
Yeah.
And they found that in today's modern workplace, everyone is overloaded with emails.
Oh, aren't we all?
If I come in on a Monday and have less than 50 emails, it is a damn miracle.
There's like a form letter that I get from some like vendor from something that I looked at one time. And they're always like, hey, Del, sorry, missed you. I'm like, listen, pal.
Delete.
I'm not. It's like, oh, I my mistake for not getting, it's like, no, I didn't get in touch with you on purpose. It's okay.
I never even respond. I purposefully spam. I'm like, I
no,
hit that little
block. They go to spam, but every once in a while something will get through and it's just like, ugh. Hey, Del, I hope you're doing okay. I'm like, no, bye.
So to kind of deal with that overloadedness, Slack, which is, mm-hmm. you guys use Slack?
We have it's called Asana. It's not Slack, oh, yeah. but it's a similar sort of project management platform. But Slack is it's like there's like, this is going to do away with email, the sort of communicative through channels.
Well, and so it's meant to kind of do team collaboration, yeah, work together on a project.
I really enjoy it.
So Slack has a group where they cut off the limit of contributors to 100.
Okay.
So there's just these groups of 100 people. If you stop contributing, they cut you off. They can add more people in.
Mm, sounds
and then
right.
They don't let it ever get over that. Mm-hmm. So that way it's just 100 people collaborating together.
Cool. I like that a lot.
But by and large, research that's been done suggests similar results. That magic number is 150 online as well.
That's really good to know.
And so one of the studies that backs that is that there was a study on Twitter, which is a little dated now, but they looked at 6 months of Twitter data for 1.7 million people.
Sheesh.
And they found, scanning through that data, that Twitter users can maintain between 100 and 200 stable, quote-unquote, Twitter relationships.
Huh. That because I follow a lot of people on Instagram and Twitter, and I'm always like, it's hard for me to stay on it because I'm just not seeing enough of interesting things. Yeah. But then I like, well, I want to follow them so they know I'm following them. But maybe if I did trim it down, it'd be more engaging and fun for me.
Well, yeah, like the meaningfulness of it is probably capped at 100, 200,
I want it to be
like
meaningful
that.
Or yeah. Else it's just garbage.
It's true. I mean, because you have hundreds of people that... Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of garbage. Have you been on the internet?
I have.
It's mostly garbage.
It's true. And so they did find that for folks that are ages 18 to 24, they tend to have much larger online social networks, mm-hmm. which makes sense, compared to those that were 55 or older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. Sorry. Yeah.
But the largest summary that I took away from this, and I wanted to end it here, was that for most people, mm-hmm. for the average person in a weird country, intimacy may just not be possible beyond 150 connections.
Okay.
Yeah.
Unless you hire somebody.
It's true. Get on it.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. It kind of is making me rethink my spheres of people, you know?
I know. It makes me want to... Yeah.
Because if there's 150 people at work and then 150 people outside of work, like, how does that line up? And maybe I'm just too peopled out. Maybe I need to cut back.
Well, I think you probably could handle more. You're more...
I have a very big neocortex.
You do, baby.
And I'm more extroverted.
Yeah.
I strive for attention. I am the mayor of nothing. And the people person of everyone.
Yeah.
Thank you for that affirmation. Yes. No, that's a really good article, Stephanie. I think that research explains a lot of things that I didn't even know needed explaining.
Yes.
But how do you, what's your take on all of this?
Well, it's making me rethink if 150 is what you can realistically maintain and that's what you're going to get back, maybe you need to trim down some of the excess.
Yeah, I'm ready to take a machete to my social media feeds. Who's with me?
Well, not just the social media feeds. Like, maybe there's a few places to, like, you know, trim, trim, trim.
Trim, trim, trim. I get that. Well, this is good. This is a good tip for a living, Stephanie. So I'm glad that you shared that with us today. Are you going to trim your social media and your real life now?
Yep.
Yeah? Oh, mm-hmm. I'm excited to see the results of you being a more engaged, intimate person. Stephanie, thank you for sharing with us today.
You're welcome.
And I am super excited that we are back, getting ready to back to our weekly schedule. And thank you all for listening and tuning back in to Learn to Like Each Other here on the podcast world. You can find us on all of the podcast platforms and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/learn to like each other. And I think that's all we have for this week. Stephanie, anything else?
We hope that after listening to this podcast, you learn that you can like each other.
Very, very much.
And the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gale of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American. What?
It's just such a dumb song.
It's so bad.
I can't help it.
Coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. There's just a lot of like syllables that they try to squeeze in because it has to be so specific. And I feel like they went for this. I mean, the searchers all say they have made Whitefish Bay. It's just so much. Lake Huron rolls, Superior sings. I feel like they just could have had a much better
song.
When
was this written? It was like the 70s, right?
Let's save it for the podcast. We'll talk about it.
I have theories of why it sounds pretentious and stupid.
Okay. Ready whenever you are.